A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. So I'm watching as a bar ticks along. I'm importing some stock video footage from my Android phone to my computer. And I am using a USB A to C cable of some kind or another. And I'm watching and it says 10 minutes remaining. Now, 10 minutes in today's world of hyper-fast computing feels like a small eternity. I'd love to chat today about a topic that, again, might seem niche, although what topic on this podcast doesn't sound very niche, and that is about getting mobile to computer transfers and what you might need to know to do it as efficiently and quickly as possible. Because there are a few different things that are sitting between my phone and the computer that I'm importing it to. Number one is the cable, of course. And here we can talk about the very strange world of USB cables, slightly infuriating world in which everybody sells phone cables for 50 cents and everybody buys them. And then everybody winds up with a bunch of crappy cables and occasionally buys. This is exactly what's happened to me. You go, you need to actually get one of those good cables. So you buy a decent cable from the internet. It looks exactly the same as the crappy cables. And now you've got 11 cables, 10 of which are useless, one of which is actually fast, and you've no idea which is which. So number one are the cables. And I think the better way to do this is to just buy good cables. So if you're looking for a cable to support maximally fast data transfer between your modern Android device using USB Type-C and your computer. If your computer has Type-C, I presume you want to go C2C, USB-C to USB-C, that is. And if it has USB Type-A, I presume you want to go A2C. Next question. USB computers, if you're a desktop weirdo like me, you probably have far less USB ports than you have things to plug into it, and therefore you get into using these USB hubs. My question is, these are another things along the fault line between the computer and your USB, the USB connection. And is that always to be avoided if you want to get, and I'm talking about, this might seem like a very obscure question, but let's say that you're shooting lots and lots of B-roll or photographs or video clips on your phone. Increasingly, I'm enjoying shooting on my phone. And you want to actually edit these on a computer because editing on your phone is no fun. So you might be doing this regularly and you're importing not one or two video clips, but hundreds of various things from your phone to your computer. So you want this process to be as quick as possible. Are you always better off or best off using a direct connection? Or can you get a USB, you know, hub or something? That'll be fine. And finally, for those of us who are not in the very stylish world of Mac products and we're dealing with non-Mac computers, where is the USB standard now in terms of supporting maximal data throughput? So if I want to get the absolute best possible performance, fastest transfer from my mobile device onto my computer, specifically what type of USB spec am I looking for in the ports? And what cable am I supporting? Am I looking for to make sure I can squeeze every amount of speed I can out of that, out of those hardware ports? Herman and Corin, we're back to talking USB cables. This time, maximizing throughput for those who are creating on mobile but editing on non-mobile. What are your recommendations for cables, hubs, and what's the best speed we can get?
You're staring at a progress bar. 10 minutes remaining. For transferring files from a phone to a computer, in a world where we can stream 8K video wirelessly, where NVMe drives push 7 gigabytes a second, 10 minutes feels like dial-up. And you're just sitting there, watching a little green bar inch across the screen, wondering which of the 11 cables in your drawer is the one that actually works.
The answer is none of them. Most people have one good cable buried under a pile of gas station USB-C imposters. and the prompt today gets right at this, what's actually sitting between your phone and your finished transfer, and how do you make it fast? We're talking cables, we're talking hubs, we're talking port specs, the whole chain.
Three bottlenecks, and most people blame the wrong one. The cable is usually the culprit, but not always. Sometimes it's the hub you bought for $12. Sometimes it's the USB port on your $3,000 desktop that turns out to be slower than the port on your phone.
This matters because more and more people are shooting on their phones now. B-roll, stock footage, family videos in 4K. Modern Android flagships shoot absolutely gorgeous video, but editing on a phone is, as the prompt puts it, no fun. So you're moving hundreds of clips to a desktop. If each transfer takes 10 minutes instead of 30 seconds, that's not an inconvenience. That's a workflow killer.
The prompt frames this around three specific questions. 1. What cable do you actually need? 2. Does a USB hub ruin your transfer speed? And 3. What USB spec should you be looking for on a non-Mac computer to get maximum throughput? Let's tick them in order.
Let's start with the cable, because it's the cheapest fix and the most common failure point. Here's the fundamental thing most people don't realize. Not all USB-C cables are created equal. In fact, most USB-C cables are just USB 2.0 cables wearing a USB-C shaped costume.
The USB-C connector is just a shape. It's like a doorframe. The doorframe doesn't tell you what's inside the room.
Inside a USB-C cable, there are supposed to be up to 24 pins. Four of those are for power and ground, that's VBUS and GND. Two are the old USB 2.0 data lines, D+ and D-. Those six pins are what every cable has, because they're mandatory for basic charging and slow data. But then there are the super speed lanes. Four pairs of differential signal wires, eight pins total, plus a few more for configuration and sideband use. Those super speed lanes are what carry anything above you SB 2.0 speeds.
Here's the thing. The 50 cent cable from the gas station or the checkout counter. It wires up the six mandatory pins and nothing else. It's a USB 2.0 cable in a USB-C jacket. It'll charge your phone. It'll transfer data at 40 megabytes per second on a good day. And that's it.
40 megabytes per second is the theoretical max of USB 2.0. In practice, you're looking at 30 to 35. That's your 10-minute transfer bar. Meanwhile, a properly wired USB 3.2 Gen 2 cable pushes 1.25 gigabytes per second. That's a 20-fold difference. Same connector shape. Same physical plug. One cable transfers your footage in 30 seconds, the other takes 10 minutes, and you cannot tell them apart by looking at them.
This is the cable identification nightmare the prompt describes. You buy a good cable online, it arrives. It looks identical to the 10 bad ones in your drawer, and now you've got 11 black cables and no labeling system.
This is where USB IF certification was supposed to help. The USB Implementers Forum created a logo program. Certified cables are supposed to carry a little Trident logo with the speed rating printed next to it. A SuperSpeed USB 10GB logo means it's certified for USB 3.2 Gen 2. A SuperSpeed USB 20GB logo means Gen 2x2. USB 4 cables get a 40GB or 80GB logo.
This logo program failed, didn't it?
It largely failed for consumer cables. USB IF certification costs about $5,000 per product. That's nothing for Anker or Cable, Matters or Belkin. It's everything for the no-name manufacturer churning out six packs for $6 on Amazon. They skip certification entirely, print whatever they want on the packaging, and the cable still works, just slowly. Most consumers never notice. They plug it in, the phone charges, they assume it's fine.
The logo is useful if you see it, but you mostly won't see it. What do you do instead?
You buy from brands that actually list the spec. If the product page says USB 2.0 or charging cable or 480 megabits per second, that's your gas station cable. If it says USB 3.2 Gen 2 or 10 gigabits per second or SuperSpeed Plus, that's a real data cable. There's also a physical tell if you look very closely at the connector. A USB-C plug that supports SuperSpeed will have more contact pads visible inside. But honestly, by the time you're squinting at pin contacts with a flashlight, you've already lost.
The practical recommendation. Buy cables that explicitly say USB 3.2, Gen 2, 10 gigabits, or USB 440 gigabits on the spec sheet. Anker Powerline 3 is a good example. Cable Matters makes solid USB 4 cables for about $12 to $15. Those are backward compatible and future-proofed. The $6 10-pack of no-name cables on Amazon? Every single one is USB 2.0. You're buying 10 slow cables.
Here's a crucial distinction. The prompt raised C2C versus A2C. If your computer has a USB-C port, you want a C2C cable. USB-C to USB, C supports all the modern specs natively. If your computer only has USB-A ports, the old rectangular ones, you need an A-to-C cable, but you're inherently limited. USB-A connectors only go up to USB 3.2 Gen 2 at 10 gigabits, and that's only if the port itself supports it. Mini USB. Ports on desktops are USB 3.2 Gen 1 5 gigabits, so right away, you're capped.
Even a good A-to-C cable has a hidden limitation. USB-A doesn't support the full USB power delivery spec. It doesn't support DisplayPort Alt mode, and it definitely doesn't support USB 4 or Thunderbolt. So, if you're building a desktop or buying a new computer for this kind of workflow, you want USB-C ports.
Which brings us to the phone side. The prompt mentions Android devices specifically, and there's a huge variance here. The Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra supports USB 3.2 Gen 2. That's 10 gigabits per second from the phone's USB-C port. The Google Pixel 8 supports USB 3.2 Gen 1, 5 gigabits. That's half the speed right out of the gate. The Pixel 8 Pro bumps up to 10 gigabits. Some budget phones are still shipping with USB 2.0 controllers in 2026, so your phone matters too.
You could buy the perfect cable, plug it into a USB 4 port on your desktop, and still get USB 2.0 speeds because your phone's controller is the bottleneck.
The whole chain has to support the speed. Phone controller, cable, port on the computer. Any one weak link caps the entire transfer. And the cable is statistically the weak link because it's the part people cheap out on.
One more cable thing before we move on. The prompt mentions having 11 cables and no idea which is which. Is there a practical way to test them without specialized equipment?
The quick and dirty test. Plug the cable between your phone and computer, start a large file transfer, and watch the speed in your file manager. If you're seeing under 100 megabytes per second, you're on USB 2.0. If you're seeing north of 300, you're on at least 5 gigabits. If you're seeing 800 plus, you're on 10 gigabits. Takes 30 seconds per cable. Label the fast ones with tape.
Masking tape and a Sharpie. The universal cable labeling system.
It's not elegant, but it works. And once you've identified your good cables, throw the slow ones in a box labeled charging only and never use them for data again.
Or just throw them out. You don't need 10 slow charging cables.
You say that, but I know you have a drawer.
I have a drawer. It's a problem. Okay, so let's say you've got the right cable. You verified it's pushing 10 gigabits. You plug it into your desktop and... wait, you don't have enough USB ports because you're a desktop weirdo with 17 peripherals, so you plug it into a USB hub, and suddenly your transfer speed tanks.
This is part two of the prompt, and it's where things get interesting. Hubs are not all created equal, and the cheap ones are performance killers in ways that aren't obvious.
Let me guess. The $12 Amazon Basic 7-port hub?
That exact hub is a perfect example of what goes wrong. Here's how a USB hub actually works. A hub takes one upstream port, the connection to your computer, and splits it into multiple downstream ports. The key question is how it splits that bandwidth. A cheap USB 3.0 hub has a single 5 gigabit upstream connection. All 7 downstream ports share that one 5 gigabit pipe. So, if you're transferring files from your phone through the hub while a webcam and an external drive are also connected, you're splitting 5 gigabits three ways. Your 10 gigabit capable phone and cable are now fighting for a slice of 5 gigabits, and probably getting less.
That's assuming the hub even supports 5 gigabits. Plenty of cheap hubs are still USB 2.0 internally.
The Amazon Basic 7-port USB 3.0 hub uses a single VIA Labs or Genesis Logic controller chip that handles all the port splitting in firmware. It's a shared backplane architecture. Every device downstream competes for the same upstream bandwidth. It's like a four-lane highway merging into one lane at a toll booth.
Versus a direct connection, which is a dedicated point-to-point link. No merging, no toll booth.
Direct connection between phone and computer gives you the full negotiated speed of the link. No sharing, no arbitration, no overhead from the hub controller. For bulk file transfers, direct is always faster.
Is the answer just, never use a hub for data transfers?
The answer is, don't use a cheap shared backplane hub. There's a different class of hub that doesn't have this problem. Thunderbolt 4 and USB 4 hubs use a fundamentally different architecture. Instead of a single shared upstream controller, they have a dedicated PCIe-based switch. Each downstream port gets its own lane allocation. A Thunderbolt 4 hub from someone like CalDigit or OWC has a 40 gigabit backplane, and it can allocate bandwidth dynamically. Your phone gets a dedicated 10 gigabit pipe through the hub. Your external SSD gets another dedicated pipe, and they don't interfere with each other.
The CalDigit Thunderbolt 4 hub versus the Amazon Basics 7 port, what's the real world difference?
In practical testing, a direct connection might give you 950 megabytes per second from a 10 gigabit phone. Through the Amazon Basics hub, you might drop to 300 or 400, and that's with nothing else plugged in. Add a webcam and an external drive, and you're down to 150. Through a CalDigit Thunderbolt 4 hub, you'll see basically the same speed as direct. Maybe a 2-3% overhead from the switching fabric, but nothing you'd notice. The difference is 3x or more in real-world use.
The price difference?
The cheap hub is $15 to $20. The Thunderbolt 4 hub is $100 to $150. That's the trade-off. If you're moving hundreds of video clips regularly, the expensive hub pays for itself and save time within a week. If you're just plugging in a keyboard and mouse, buy the cheap one.
The rule of thumb for bulk transfers, plug directly into the computer. If you absolutely must use a hub, get one with a dedicated controller. Thunderbolt 4 or USB 4, not a passive USB 3.0 splitter.
Here's a nuance. USB 3.2 Gen 2 hubs do exist, and they're better than the 5 gigabit ones. These use a 10 gigabit upstream and a smarter controller. Anker makes a few, as does Ugreen. They're around $40 to $60. They'll handle a single high-speed device fairly well, but they're still shared backplane. Plug in two high-speed devices and you're back to splitting bandwidth. The Thunderbolt and USB 4 hubs are the only ones that give you true dedicated lanes.
What about powered versus unpowered? Does that matter for data speed?
Not directly for data speed, but it matters for stability. An unpowered hub draws all its power from the computer's USB port. If you plug in a phone that's also trying to charge while transferring, you can get voltage droop, packet errors, and retransmissions. Those retransmissions look like slower transfer speeds even though the link speed hasn't changed. A powered hub with its own wall adapter eliminates that variable.
Powered, dedicated controller hub if you're going the hub route. Let's move to the third piece, the computer's USB port itself. The prompt specifically asks about non-Mac computers, and this is where things get messy.
Macs have had Thunderbolt 4 across the entire lineup for years. If you buy a Mac, you know what you're getting. On the PC side, it's a maze of chipset limitations, motherboard tiers, and misleading labeling.
The classic PC experience. You buy a $2,000 desktop and discover the USB-C port on the front panel is running at 5 gigabits because the motherboard manufacturer saved $3 on a retimer chip.
That's not even an exaggeration. Here's the lay of the land as of May 2026. Most mid-range and budget PC motherboards, B-series and H-series chipsets from Intel, B-series from AMD, ship with US B 3.2 Gen 1 ports at 5 gigabits, and maybe one or two USB 3.2 Gen 2 ports at 10 gigabits. The rear IO panel will usually label them, but the labeling is often just SS with a tiny number next to it. SS5 means 5 gigabits. SS10 means 10 gigabits.
Super speed. But make it cryptic.
Then there's USB 3.2 Gen 2x2 at 20 gigabits. This uses two lanes of 10 gigabits bonded together. It requires a USB-C connector. It doesn't work over USB-A at all. As of 2026, 20 gigabit ports are still relatively rare on consumer PCs. You'll find them on high-end X-series AMD boards and Z-series Intel boards, but they're not standard.
USB 4 at 40 gigabits.
This is where it gets interesting. USB 4 is finally showing up on PC motherboards, but it's far from universal. On the AMD side, the X870E chipset supports USB 4 natively. Some boards from Asus, Gigabyte, and ASRock include USB 4 ports. On the Intel side, Z890 boards have Thunderbolt 4 support, which also covers USB 4. But here's the catch. On most non-Mac PCs, Thunderbolt 4 is still Intel only. If you have an AMD system, you get USB 4, not Thunderbolt 4. They're interoperable at the data level, but Thunderbolt 4 has stricter minimum requirements. It mandates PCIe tunneling at 32 gigabits. It mandates dual 4K display support. It mandates wake from sleep. USB 4 allows some of those as optional.
Thunderbolt 4 is USB 4 with a stricter dress code.
That's a very corn way to put it, but yes, Thunderbolt 4 is the overachiever. USB 4 is the same underlying technology. They both use the Thunderbolt 3 protocol, but USB 4 lets manufacturers cut corners that Thunderbolt certification wouldn't allow.
For the practical question, what spec should someone look for on their PC to get the fastest phone transfers?
For a phone, USB 3.2 Gen 2 at 10 gigabits is sufficient for almost everyone. Remember, the fastest Android phones today top out at 10 gigabits. A 40 gigabit USB 4 port won't make your phone transfer any faster if the phone's controller is 10 gigabits. The extra bandwidth is useful if you're also running an external SSDA or a display through the same port simultaneously, but for phone to PC file transfers specifically, 10 gigabits is the practical ceiling.
Step 1. Check your motherboard manual or your PC spec sheet. Look for USB 3.2 Gen 2 or 10 gigabits per second on at least one port. Plug your phone into that port directly.
If you only have 5 gigabit ports, your transfers will cap at around 450 megabytes per second real world, regardless of how good your cable is. At that point, a better cable won't help. You'd need to add a USB 3.2 Gen 2 PCIe card. They're about $30, or upgrade your motherboard.
Let's talk about the phone's USB controller again, because this is a gotcha. Even if your desktop has a 40 gigabit USB 4 port and your cable is certified for 40 gigabits, if your phone's USB controller is 5 gigabits, that's your speed. The chain negotiates down to the lowest common denominator.
Phone manufacturers are weirdly inconsistent about this. The Samsung S-Series Ultras have been 10 gigabits for a few generations now. The base S24 is 5 gigabits. The Pixel 9 series, we're expecting those later this year, will likely bump the base model to 10 gigabits, but it's not confirmed. A lot of mid-range phones from Motorola, OnePlus, and Xiaomi still ship with USB 2.0 controllers. 480 megabits per second. In 2026...
480 megabits. That's 60 megabytes per second. For a phone that shoots 4K video.
It's absurd. And it's a cost-cutting measure that most consumers never notice because they transfer files wirelessly or just never transfer files at all. But if you're shooting B-roll on your phone and editing on desktop, you need to check your phone's USB spec before you even worry about cables and ports.
The diagnostic flow is check phone spec, check cable spec, check computer port spec. The slowest of the three is your transfer speed.
There's one more variable that's specific to Android, the MTP protocol. MTP, Media Transfer Protocol, is what Android uses for file transfers over USB. It's not the same as mounting your phone as a mass storage device. MTP has overhead. It's a packet-based protocol originally designed for media players, and it's not particularly efficient. Even with the perfect cable, perfect port, and perfect phone controller, MTP overhead can knock 10 to 15% off your theoretical maximum.
That 10 gigabit link that should give you 1.25 gigabytes per second? Real-world MTP transfers might top out around 1 gigabyte per second.
And that's still blazing fast. Your 100 video clips transfer in under a minute, but it's worth knowing that you'll never quite hit the theoretical number. MTP is the final bottleneck that nobody talks about.
Is there any way around MTP?
A few options. Some Android phones support USB mass storage mode, but it's increasingly rare. Google has been deprecating it. The better workaround is to use ADB Pull if you're technically inclined. ADB, Android Debug Bridge, bypasses MTP entirely and gives you raw file access. Transfers are noticeably faster, sometimes 20 to 30% faster than MTP. But ADB requires enabling developer options and using a command line. It's not exactly user-friendly.
For most people, MTP is what you've got. Buy the good cable, use the right port, and accept that you'll get 80 to 85% of the theoretical speed.
Which, to be clear, is still a 20x improvement over the gas station cable on a 5 gigabit port through a cheap hub. We're talking 10 minutes down to 30 seconds. That's the win.
Let's do a quick recap of the chain before we get to practical takeaways. Phone controller, cable, hub if present, computer port, and transfer protocol. 5 potential bottlenecks. The cable is the cheapest to fix and the most likely to be wrong. The hub is optional. Skip it for bulk transfers unless you've invested in a Thunderbolt or USB 4 hub. The computer port you can check in 30 seconds by looking at your motherboard specs. The phone controller you're stuck with unless you buy a different phone. And MTP is the tax you pay for using Android.
After all that, what do you actually do? Here's the practical checklist.
Step 1. Buy the right cable. USB. IF certified, USB 3.2 Gen 2 at minimum, that's 10 gigabits, or USB 4 at 40 gigabits for future proofing. The USB 4 cable costs about $15 and works with everything. Brands, Cable Matters, Anker, Belkin, Caldigit. Skip the $6 10 packs, they're all USB 2.0.
Step 2, use a direct connection. Plug your phone directly into the fastest USB-C port on your computer. If your computer doesn't have USB-C, use a USB. A 3.2 Gen 2 port with a good A to C cable, but know you're capped at 10 gigabits, and that's only if the port supports it.
Step 3. If you must use a hub, get one with a dedicated controller. Thunderbolt 4 or USB 4 hub. Yes, it's $100 to $150. Yes, it's worth it if you're doing this regularly. A Caldigit Thunderbolt 4 hub will pass through your full 10 gigabit phone speed without breaking a sweat.
Step 4. Test your setup. Plug everything in, start a large file transfer, and check your speed. If you're under 100 megabytes per second, something in the chain is USB 2.0. Track it down. It's probably the cable.
Step 5. Label your good cables.
Step 6, which is more of a future-proofing move, if your desktop only has 5 gigabit USB ports, consider adding a USB 3.2 Gen 2 PCIe card. $30, takes 5 minutes to install, and it gives you a 10 gigabit port that your good cable can actually use.
One thing we haven't touched on, what about just using wireless? Wi-Fi 7 is theoretically multiple gigabits. Could that replace cables for this workflow?
Wi-Fi 7 has a theoretical maximum of 46 gigabits. In practice, real-world Wi-Fi 7 transfers between a phone and a desktop on the same network might hit 2 to 3 gigabits. That's 250 to 375 megabytes per second. That's faster than USB 2.0, but slower than a direct 10 gigabit USB connection by a factor of 3 or 4. And Wi-Fi is inherently less stable. Interference, distance, walls, other devices on the network all eat into that speed.
Wireless is the convenience option, not the speed option, for bulk transfers of hundreds of video clips. Cable still wins by a lot.
I think that'll be true for a while. There's also UWB, ultra-wideband, which has been discussed for high-speed device-to-device transfers. Samsung has experimented with it. But UWB's range is measured in centimeters, not meters. It's a desk-level technology. For transferring files from your phone to your desktop 3 feet away, maybe. For anything beyond that, not yet.
The cable isn't going anywhere. Which brings us to a kind of ironic conclusion. We've spent 20 minutes talking about how to make a cable transfer faster, and the answer is mostly buy the right cable. The technology exists. The standards exist. The problem is that the market is flooded with cables that look right but aren't.
The USB-C connector is a victim of its own success. It's universal, it's reversible, it works for everything. And that universality means manufacturers can sell something that physically fits but electrically only implements the bare minimum. The average consumer sees a USB-C plug and assumes it does everything. The reality is that most USB-C cables on the market are just charging cables with a fancy connector.
The USB, IF, could have mandated clearer labeling. They could have required speed ratings printed on the cable itself. They didn't, and here we are.
There's also a regulatory angle. The European Union mandated USB-C for charging. They didn't mandate anything about data speeds. So manufacturers comply by putting a USB-C port on everything, but they wire it for USB 2.0 because that's cheaper and the regulation doesn't stop them.
The EU mandated the doorframe, but not the room behind it.
And that's why we're doing this episode, because the spec sheet matters, the certification matters, and the $10 difference between a bad cable and a good one is the difference between 10 minutes and 30 seconds.
To wrap this into something actionable, if you're shooting on your phone and editing on desktop, spend $15 on a USB 4 cable, plug directly into your fastest USB-C port, and if you need a hub, buy one that doesn't share bandwidth. That's it. That's the whole thing.
Check your phone's USB spec before you blame the cable. If your phone only does 5 gigabits, a 40 gigabit cable won't help. The chain is only as fast as its slowest link.
The prompt to ask what the best speed we can get is, real world, with a 10 gigabit phone, a good cable, and a direct connection to a 10 gigabit port, you're looking at around a gigabyte per second after MTP overhead. That's a 4 gigabyte video file in 4 seconds. That's your target.
If you're on a 5 gigabit phone, half that. Still fast enough that you're not staring at a progress bar. Still a massive improvement over the gas station cable.
One open question before we close. As phones start shooting 8K and ProRes, the iPhone already does ProRes. Android flagships are adding it. File sizes are going to explode. A minute of 8K ProRes is tens of gigabytes. At what point does even 10 gigabits feel slow again?
That's the thing. We're already seeing phones with internal storage hitting 4 terabytes. The Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra goes up to 1 terabyte. As phone cameras get better and codecs get heavier, the volume of data people want to move off their phones is going to grow faster than the transfer speeds. 10 gigabits feels fast today. In 3 years, when phones are shooting 8K RAW, it might feel like USB 2.0 feels today.
The cable problem doesn't go away. It just shifts up the speed scale. And the advice stays the same. Buy the cable that matches the spec, not the one that matches the price.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1940s, Soviet pigment chemists in Kyrgyzstan experimented with chromium-based yellow pigments derived from local mineral deposits, producing a shade known as Kyrgyz chrome yellow. The pigment's tonal complexity, its subtle shift from warm to cool under different light, was described by one researcher as having the same spectral range as the tonal distinctions between Cantonese and Hokkien when mapped onto a chromatic scale.
I have no idea what to do with that.
Cantonese and Hokkien map to yellow pigment chemistry in Kyrgyzstan. That's going to sit in my brain for the rest of the day.
This has been My Weird Props, thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing. If you're listening and you've got a drawer full of mystery cables, tonight's your night. Test them, label them, throw out the slow ones.
If you want more episodes on the hidden infrastructure of everyday tech, we're at myweirdprompts.com. Rate us wherever you get your podcasts. It genuinely helps.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from law. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.